And now, sports and other stuff. The Closers. Join the talk now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
The wild card name that it's fun to talk about. I think about Hugh Freeze.
I come to the conclusion I'm going to suspend him for this game.
The Konzo is just brutally, this is what I think, and I have no problem telling you so my players read it on the internet or in the paper.
You can't allow home to make you lazy. I didn't think Barnett played a great game. I thought Kevin did some good things. I thought he could have been more assertive.
It's definitely something that we have not been able to do since I've been here. Their record is the same as ours. We're both pretty good football teams, and so we got to go out there and play hard.
Listen, nobody likes to lose, and when you have lost a few in a row, you know, sometimes funny things happen, right?
They're a great team, and they've won a ton of games. The bottom line is you're going to have very, very competitive games.
If anything, maybe we throw one or two more the other way.
So it's a game plan by game plan, week to week type deal there. So we got to be ready for that.
So we're going to have our hands full, as we do every week.
Yeah, that's our profession. That's what we do. We focus week to week.
This is what we've worked for. This is what we want. This is where we want to be.
We've got a really good-looking opponent. I know they're fired up, and this is going to be a big game for us.
Welcome in Thursday here on The Closes alongside Jay Sparks. I'm George Young. Hope your day is going well. Opening montage, Gabe Bearman, a couple of appearances, along with Andy Reid and head coach Konzo Martin, Derek Carr, Alex Smith, Drew Brees. Derek was back at it again about throwing maybe to the side of the field that Marcus Peters is playing on. Well, not playing on now. Mike McCarthy, Green Bay. Kirk Cousins. Matthew Stafford. Marcus Mariota. Marcus Mariota is still trying to master that whole say things without really saying something. Because he kind of stumbled over his piece just a little bit.
I'd like to learn how to do that.
What, stumble over your piece a little bit?
No, learn how to say something
to
without saying something.
Oh, okay. And Pete Carroll wrapping it up. They're going to face a really good-looking opponent. I don't know if they can play football, but, you know.
Yeah. We'll get there.
D. Gordon, Seattle Mariners.
Yep.
The Mariners are shedding payroll faster than World Series champion Tampa Bay Rays did back in the day.
They were never World Series champion.
The Devil Rays?
Right.
Yeah. I was abbreviating. That's how they'd like to be known.
Everybody needs a little devil in them.
That's right. Devil dogs. Those are good.
I hope we do the ballpark food tour again this year at the beginning of the season.
Okay.
All the new food items.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was one of my
favorite afternoons of this past year.
It was certainly, fortunately for us, a low-calorie adventure because we didn't have to worry about actually eating any of it.
I could have handled like a forkful of each of them.
Of each one?
Of each of them. I don't know that I would have done the whole shebang on any of them.
Man, there were some stout meals in and among all of that. A lot of stuff going on here today. We're gonna talk some NFL. Of course, Marcus Peters, the suspension, that was officially announced. We talked a little bit about it yesterday, but you heard the words from Andy Reid. You've got Thursday Night Football tonight here on KFRU and KLIK, Falcons and Saints. And that's an interesting one because the Falcons are trying to avoid another two-game losing streak. It would be their second this season. While the Saints are trying for, I think it's their third or their fourth 10-win season. And if they do that, that'd be the most ever number of 10-win seasons that they've had as a franchise with all of them coming under Sean Payton. Ah, the heady days of wearing a paper grocery sack at a New Orleans Saints game.
Yeah, it's just, you know, that was Jets fans' favorite costume, but yeah. The Saints had their moments sure. You know, the old NFC, you know, I guess the NFC South now, it's teams that just, you know, the Saints were so bad for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Falcons really were pretty bad for so long.
Mm-hmm.
The Bucks were so bad in Dreamsicle for so long.
They were the last team to go winless.
Yeah.
That being challenged right now by the
I thought the Lions
Browns.
Just went winless a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's just, you know, when you get a coach like that, it's nice when kind of the city, the franchise, the identity, especially in, like, New Orleans. Yeah, they've got the Pelicans now, but, like, I mean, the Saints are that city's identity to pro sports. And when it's been so bad, and you get a guy like Sean Payton, who seems like a good guy. I know there was that year for the
little bounty gate thing going on there.
But still, overall, seems like a pretty good guy. And I like it. I think if I wasn't a Chiefs fan, if I wasn't geographically connected to a team, I think I would like the Saints.
Fun team.
Yeah.
And listen,
I got tons of black and gold stuff already.
Well, and back in the day, those Hurricanes really helped the Saints game go by faster.
Yeah.
Last winless team, Detroit Lions, went 0-16.
Yeah.
Then it was the Baltimore Colts in 82. They went 0-8. That was a strike-shortened season, so it really doesn't count.
Was it 76 bucks?
76 bucks.
Yep.
0-14. The 1960 Dallas Cowgirls, their first season, they went 0-11-1. The Brooklyn Tigers, they went 0-10, and they never got an opportunity to improve on that. They disbanded. They did not return to the league after World War II ended. The 1944 Cardinals, Pittsburghs, Card Pits, 0-10. That was the merger between the Chicago Cardinals and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Player shortages during World War II. So, yeah, go Browns.
It's an exclusive list.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while. Let's do it. Come on. Where's the lack of effort? SEC offices announcing the all-freshman team. Tight end Albert Okwuegbunam, running back Larry Roundtree, and center Tristan Castillo landing on the offensive side, and defensive end Trey Williams on the defensive side. Roundtree gets in as the all-purpose selection.
Yeah, well, I mean, well-deserved, I think, for all three of those guys. I don't think any one of them is a stretch. I think all four of them deserved it.
It was interesting that Trey Williams got on there because he was one of those guys that early on in the season looked like he was going to really have a hard time fitting in with what the scheme was on the defensive side and getting a role. And then he just kind of exploded and had a really good year.
Yep.
And as Coach Odom reminded us many times, that he felt like we talked to him more than he talked to him.
Right. Hey, by the way.
Yes.
Rock'em Nation, David Morrison has done a snap count throughout the season.
Yes, and yes,
today
he has.
Is a part two of kind of a season wrap of snap count.
Okay.
The first one was personnel, and this one was formations. Mm-hmm. And the look at the formations and what was successful and what was not was really intriguing. Even in non-garbage time, the three wide receiver, two running back, and by two running back we mean an H-back, one of those three really great tight ends that Mizzou trotted out this year, and a tailback, 7.49 yards per carry.
Gah.
When they ran out of that formation.
You know, you know what happens if you do that twice?
Well, let's see. I was told that four plus four equals a first down.
Right.
I don't know what 7.49 plus 7.49 equals.
Well, nearly 15.
Oh. Well, I thought you were gonna say first
and a
down.
First down.
Oh, see? How can this is like algebra because I don't understand what first down means. I'm getting confused. I'm having flashbacks to algebra. So
let's not do that.
Okay.
Let's not do that.
But his piece, anyway, the we digress. The piece today in at Rock'em Nation, Missouri Offensive and Defensive Set Analysis, The Beauty of the H-back, by David Morrison, is awesome.
Yeah, he does solid work, and he picks up right where he left off when he was with the Columbia Daily Tribune covering Missouri Tiger football. And to what David has put together, if you're Missouri and you're Barry Odom, are you looking for somebody who can take what that has happened and take it the next step? Because if that's the case, you're whittling down just by what you want to do the number of viable candidates for your offensive coordinator position.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you take it. I mean,
I'm stunned that they haven't hired one yet. I mean, it's been, what, 36 hours?
Let's not get all Tennessee come on. Here. Come on.
Come now. On. Graham, let's get a move on
Graham
here.
Graham Harrell.
What?
Graham Harrell. Just saying, that's your guy right there. That's the guy who gives you the continuity.
Mm-hmm.
It's not from within, but Heupel, part of the same Leach coaching tree.
Right.
And you get the same air raid style, but he knows how to run that ball, knows how important that is, and that's the guy. So just throwing that out there that's who you're rooting for.
Yeah, the only other option, not the only other option, but and Gabe broke this down a little bit yesterday, and he'll continue to do so on PowerMizzou.com as he unearths additional names, but Joe John Finley, who's currently the tight ends coach, he's the guy you see on the sideline with the warm-up jacket and the tape mm-hmm. on his fingers.
Yes.
That's Joe John Finley.
Yes.
And he has a spectacular beard.
Mm-hmm.
Rivaled only by yours when you let it go Amish length.
Yeah.
But what?
Nothing.
Oh, okay.
I like a good beard.
Yeah. Well, he's got one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Joe John Finley would be the inside candidate. Graham Harrell. Gabe mentioned yesterday Hugh Freeze, and he did that with the caveat of not sure that Jim Stirk would do something like that. And that's the other problem that you have is the personality of Hugh Freeze, along with all the baggage, is so much larger than everything else around Missouri football right now that I don't think that would be a viable option, especially when you look at all the baggage that he's bringing along. You know, like cell phone, burner cell phones and
right.
and such as that.
Right.
Yeah. A contact list involving 900 numbers. Not like 900 numbers, but 900 dash.
Sure, right.
The next yes. seven.
Yes. Yeah. That's not a very Mizzou hire.
No.
Your Mizzou Tigers football, not so much in the neighborhood of the gross, splashy hire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hiring Heupel as the offensive coordinator, if you look back, that's one of the splashiest things from a staff hiring standpoint Mizzou's ever done. I mean, not ever, right. but in the Pinkel Odom years,
mm-hmm.
Pinkel brought his staff from Toledo. When you read Pinkel's book and he lists his staff that left Toledo to come to Mizzou,
right.
it's everybody you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody who was there for the majority of his time.
Yeah, and very few that you didn't know.
Right.
Because one of the things that was really important to him, and it was important to Pinkel's mentor, Don James, was staff continuity. Because you develop that rapport, you develop that trust, you develop that consistency of effort as you worked your way through everything. And no matter what happened, you always had, listen, we know this works. We've done it before. We know it works. So that's why that staff stayed together. You're in a bit of a newer era now, and I think the Heupel hire was a couple of things. One, it seemed like it was kind of a favor for Barry to Josh to get him out of the Northwest. But secondly, allow him another opportunity to prove that he was a really good offensive coordinator after what happened at Oklahoma. Because he got unloaded from Oklahoma in one of those athletic director to head coach meetings that begins with, "Coach, we think that there's some changes that need to be made.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?"
Mm-hmm.
And then Heupel was gone. So that's, you knew he was a great mind. And UCF, listen, they landed a pretty good coach. Now, he's got if he packed some personality along on the carry-on, that'd be great. But Randy Shannon's going to be the defensive coordinator down there from Florida.
That's a great hire
yes,
for him.
Right. So that's a good school to keep an eye on. Just watch what they do over the next couple of years, because that's going to be a program that's going to make some noise, even more so than it did this year with the 12-0 season under Scott Frost. I don't know if Scott's going to do the same thing in Nebraska.
Right.
That's a tough one.
Right.
That is a tough one. But Barry Odom, piece by Ben Fredrickson today in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. The whole thing is firepower of Mizzou's offense hinges on Odom's hiring power. And he's absolutely right. What kind of sell job? Because we've seen and listened to Barry Odom at press conferences and at post games. And he's not dynamic. He's very, very, very careful with what he says. It's very measured, except for the whole post-Auburn thing. And even that was planned out. But I think the recruiting side of Barry Odom that we do not see has got to be really dynamic. Going to have to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's not, man, there are going to be some tough times. And oh, by the way, he's also got to contend with the fact that, you know, you don't have an offense coordinator now, and he probably will not be coaching the football game in the booth with the Tigers. And that's going to be left to Glenn Ellerbe and Andy Hill, if that's how that works. Glenn Ellerbe and Andy Hill, would be the interim co-offensive coordinators, and Ellerbe is the offensive line coordinator. Andy Hill is in charge of the wide receivers. Previous to that was in charge of the quarterbacks. Previous to that was wide receivers, and prior to that was running backs.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause he goes back a fur piece with Missouri.
Yeah.
So,
Swiss Army coach?
Pretty much, yeah. So, you know, this next hire is going to be really, and I'm going to be really interested to see, not the defensive side of the ball. I fully expect that Ryan Walters will be promoted to defensive coordinator for next year. But the offensive coordinator position, I think, is going to be really interesting, because it's going to have a twofold thing. It's going to give you an indication of where the next 2 to 3 years is going to go for Missouri football.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, it's going to also give you a little bit of an indication of the potential and capability of Drew Locke as a senior here, if he stays.
Mm-hmm.
That's a capital I, capital F, if he stays. And there is right now a little bit of a discussion about that. We'll talk with Dave Matter, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, about that here in just a little bit. Also on the show today, we are efforting head wrestling coach Brian Smith. Our schedules kind of got goofed up just a little bit today, but we're going to try to get him on. Also, we go one-on-one with women's basketball player Kayla Michael. You may remember her as Kayla McDowell. Well, she got married over the summer, and I had a chance to sit down with her earlier today and do a little bit of one-on-one with her. Dave Matter, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, will join us here in just a little bit.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
And Dave Matter is going to join us here in just a little bit. We're going to talk some Missouri Tiger stuff, especially Missouri Tiger football, a little bit of Missouri Tiger basketball, and South End Zone stuff. I don't know if you saw this on MLB.com today, like an hour ago. Anthony Reyes, you remember him? St. Louis Cardinals, former St. Louis Cardinal pitcher.
Name sounds familiar.
Yeah. He beat Justin Verlander in the 2006 World Series as the Cardinals won that World Series. He's now a member of the Los Angeles County Fire Department. He's also out fighting those wildfires.
I mean,
that's no laughing matter.
Yeah, but I mean, those are the stories that get you.
Yeah.
You know?
He was Reyes, Jennifer Langosh, who is the MLB.com beat writer for the St. Louis Cardinals, writes that Reyes, a member of the Los Angeles County Fire Department, is among the hundreds of firefighters who are trying to control a series of wildfires engulfing the metro area. Reyes was on duty Wednesday night into Thursday when those winds were gusting over 70 miles an hour. He graduated from the Fire Academy in March, joined the LA County Fire Department, and he says, I've always wanted to be a firefighter. I love playing sports. I love the fire department. My dad was a firefighter. My grandfather was a firefighter. I've always had it in my blood, and I always heard the stories. For me, it felt like a sports team. I thought it was the perfect job. To everybody that is out there right now fighting those fires, man, I hope they're safe. Because that thing is just beastly.
Yeah, yesterday was 70-mile-an-hour winds, right. 60-mile-an-hour winds on the schedule for today in the forecast. And that is not, even if you hear the news there, even areas that were cleared with those kinds of winds, all it takes is one ember blowing over a mile away into a spot that was already cleared, and it can just re-erupt again.
Yeah.
So, yes, please be safe out there. If you know people out there, check in. If there's anything you can do to help them, please do.
Yeah, Reyes finishes up the interview with Jennifer saying, when I had the opportunity to play baseball and get school paid for and another opportunity as a professional, I took the chance because you can only play professional baseball for so long. As a firefighter, you get into that a little later in life. I thought it was a great opportunity to do the two things that I love. And Jennifer finishes it up by saying, as of Thursday morning, firefighters continue to work to contain the multiple fires spreading around Southern California. Dry conditions and gusting winds continue to complicate these efforts. Just think about a wind gust that is moving as fast as a vehicle on I-70. That's, yeah.
I mean, when it seems windy here, when you think, oh, you look outside and you see the trees moving, that's like 25, 30 miles an hour. Like, that's... And that's a lot. Like, you get trees bending. You get, you know, maybe a branch or two in your neighborhood as you drive out of your neighborhood that have fallen off trees. Double it. Ugh.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Not fun.
Yep. It's, anyway, I hope, really, really, it's a dangerous, dangerous situation. And you just hope that the folks, as you mentioned, Jay, if you know anybody out there, just check in on them.
Yeah.
Because it's an easy thing to do.
Yeah. We're so far away. It's not like you're going to drive over and help them or they're going to come crash on your couch or anything like that if they have had issues. But just a simple check-in. It's good.
Yeah. But cool story. Jennifer Langosh, MLB.com, Anthony Reyes. Again, beat Justin Verlander in the 2006 World Series game when the Tigers beat the when the Cardinals beat the Detroit Tigers to claim that. So, it was, again, if you get a chance to read that, it's a cool article. Meanwhile, we're going to get ready for Dave Matter, St. Louis Post-Dispatch. There's a lot to talk about, including why the Missouri Tigers haven't hired an offensive coordinator yet. I think this is just outlandish. 36 hours in, and no hire has been made as of yet.
The Closers. Be part of the show now. 800-229-5378. News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.
Hey, welcome back to The Closers here alongside Jay Sparks. I'm George Young and happy to be joined by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch's Dave Matter. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave_Matter, capital D, capital M. Look for the little blue check. And, man, appreciate you taking the time with us here today. It's been an interesting run for this Missouri Tiger basketball team as we get started with that one. 7-2. And as we talked a lot about yesterday, it was amazing in a 19-point win, how it really felt like in the post game that it was a loss. This is a different kind of coach than we're used to dealing with, isn't it?
Yeah, there's definitely a different standard. You know, I think Konzo kind of recognizes that the expectation level was so low the last few years, just because the losing was just so prevalent that when you do win a game by any, whether it's by 1 point or 19. That maybe there's a mentality that, hey, that's good enough. And it's not good enough for him. So I think, you know, he knows that this team only won 8 games last year and that the bulk of the nucleus of that team from a year ago is, again, still the nucleus of his team. And he doesn't want those guys to just settle for being good enough to beat a Miami, Ohio by double digits. He really wanted to point out the things he didn't think they did well because, you know, they have this 4-game home stretch right now where, yeah, they should be able to show up and even not on their best night still win these games. But from here on out, it is Illinois and SEC, and it's obviously going to be much, much harder. And I think he was really trying to drive home that message with his post-game comments the other night.
Dave, does the burden of that level of coaching fall so heavily on him in the sense that, you know, at Kentucky, you get that whole new roster of freshmen every year, but the holdovers that are there have won and they know how to win. They know what to do to win. Here, I mean, he and his staff are having to teach that part because you just don't have the holdovers who have won. I mean, is that really what they're really trying to get with, especially with the reaction he had after last night?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. You know, these players have not really have ever overcome adversity before, and they've never really had to overcome success either. I mean, you know, like Konzo said, you know, patting yourself on the back can become dangerous, especially when you're sitting in late November, early December, you're at 7 wins. They're probably feeling pretty good about themselves because they're only one win away from last year's total. Well, that's great compared, you know, if you just compare it to last year, but nobody's really comparing it to last year anymore. Now it's about being a good program and being competitive in this conference and on a national level. So he's raised the standard, but he is aware of what these guys have been through, and he's just got to have to pull them out of that and build up their confidence, build up that mentality to where they just can't be happy by beating a Miami team that wasn't very good, that played pretty hard and wouldn't back down the other night. I was impressed how they just wouldn't go away.
I think Missouri was kind of stunned that they wouldn't just go away. Didn't quite get that going. Green Bay is Saturday night, 8 o'clock the tip time, and this is another one of those games that you look at and you go, okay, you just take care of what you do and try to improve on the things that you're not doing well at. Again, another opportunity to try to figure out who this point guard is going to be for this Missouri Tiger team. Dave, where do you see this going? As we talked about it today, kind of still the lab experiment rolling.
Yeah, and I think it's still kind of wide open. I think they're going to go with whoever at the time is hurting them the least, because I don't know if anybody's really helping them to where you say, okay, this guy's going to play 30 minutes because he's the guy. You know, for stretches down in Orlando, it was Jordan Geist. I know he's been slowed a little bit, I think, by a back injury. He doesn't look as nimble as he's been, especially defensively, and Konzo wasn't thrilled with how he played defense the other night. Harris has looked like a freshman at times where you see that skill, you see the speed. He's got some pretty slick moves inside, and then he'll throw one off Jeremiah Tillman's feet, or he'll just make a mistake on defense and give up a basket. So the leash seems like it's pretty short with him, but again, he's a freshman, and you know Konzo doesn't – he's not going to play favorites to where he's going to have to – say he's the heir apparent there when he's got other guys that he wants to give a shot to secure that job too. So I think it's going to continue to be a committee approach until somebody steps up and plays like a guy that could be out there for 25, 30 minutes a night.
Dave, it's too early to give a final grade by any stretch of the imagination, but the preseason, the talk of the pro style offense, getting out and running a lot, Can we kind of apply a midterm grade to what we think about what, you know, has this coaching staff, you know, stamped this team with what they want to do? Or do you give it an incomplete because of the Michael Porter Jr. factor not being there?
Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to really judge them based on, you know, the system they installed because they pretty much had to scrap it. And the idea of the concept of the offense was really installed with the idea of having a really high volume 6'10", high-volume shooter who's 6'10", and can do a lot of different things for you. So it's different. It's looking different than what they originally planned for. I still think you look at some of the advanced metrics and even some of just the simple numbers, they're shooting the ball really well. Their assist numbers are high. They are turning it over a lot, but they're a pretty good rebounding team because with their size, they should be. They've been pretty efficient at times offensively. Even though, like we talked about, the point guard situation has kind of been in flux, and they don't have that one really dynamic scorer that we thought Porter would be. But I think still offensively they've been pretty good, and when they get hot 3-point from the arc, they've really gone on some good runs against good competition too. So I think it's been the offense has not been the problem. They've been just fine offensively.
Yeah, they've not been too shabby on the defensive side either, although, you know, that's one of the things that Coach Martin has really hangs his hat on and has done so during his coaching career. Dave Matter, St. Louis Post-Dispatch with us here on the Closers. We knew what we had with some of the returners, Barnett and Terrence Phillips and Kevin Puryear and that group, Jordan Geist. We knew the press clippings of the guys that were coming in. Of the new additions, who's impressed you the most with after what you read with what you see?
I'd probably go with Jontay Porter. I thought he would face more of a learning curve just from the physical aspect of the game. And maybe he still will. He might hit that freshman wall. He hasn't scored at all, really, the last two games. He's not a guy I ever thought was going to come in this year and consistently score 12, 14 points a game. But he can fill up the stat sheet because he does so many other things well. He can block shots. He plays with so much energy that he'll get a bunch of rebounds. His passing is so good that he'll get a bunch of assists. So he looks the part. He doesn't look overmatched out there on the defensive end. He plays with a lot of poise, more so than I would have thought for a guy as young as he is. And a guy who, you know, has never, let's face it, at the high school level, for the most part, he's playing Class 3 Missouri. And now he's playing Division One, going on the road, playing against the likes of West Virginia and Utah and St. John's, the level of competition he's never been up against before. And I've been pretty impressed with him.
Dave, we only know the team we know that's on the floor now and where they're at and what we see, the point guard fluctuations, the young play occasionally, the turnovers. We see all these things. For this team, minus whether or not Michael comes back or anything else that might happen like that, what's the ceiling for this roster now that you take away?
It's a really good question. I still think they can be in that 5-6 range in the SEC, and I don't know necessarily if the teams in front of them would be the ones we thought were going to be. You know, you look at what Florida's done recently, losing at home to getting killed by Florida State and then losing to Loyola Chicago. Kentucky has looked shaky at times and not as powerful as they usually are, even with a new cast of freshmen. I think it could be wide open in this league. And I think Missouri, even as they are built right now, can compete against every team in this conference. Not that they're going to beat them all, but I think they can be really, really competitive in this conference. And I think, you know, they can still play their way into the NCAA tournament. They're really going to benefit from the schedule, the way that it played out. Now, the strength of schedule is going to drop down a little bit here the next few games.
Mm-hmm.
But playing away from home against the likes of Utah and West Virginia and St. John's and even Central Florida, that's going to pay off down the road when you're looking at RPIs and strength of schedule.
As this Missouri Tiger team heads toward the holiday break and then opening up the SEC schedule beginning in January, you've got the three home games left, and then you have the Illinois game. So four more games. What's the win total as you see the way this, not just the schedule breaks out, but how they seem to play against teams that are of lesser competition?
There's no reason they shouldn't, you know, close it out here and win the rest of these in non-conference play. And I'm not saying there's no reason they shouldn't lose to Illinois, but watching both teams right now, Missouri is better. And I think they'll get a boost emotionally on that stage, and so will Illinois. But I think Missouri's the better team right now. So if they're not 11-2 going into the SEC play, they're going to get upset somewhere. And that's a really good place to be against this schedule going into league play. And it's a tough start to league play for Missouri. If you just look at the schedule, they open at South Carolina, get Florida at home. I think they go to Arkansas then. They have Georgia at home. So they really have a shot at losing a couple of those early games. And if not, if they win them, then they're in really great position, some of the toughest games they'll play this year.
Dave Matter, St. Louis Post-Dispatch with us here on the Closers. Let's switch over to football. All right, Dave, it's been not quite 36 hours. How come we don't have an offensive coordinator hired yet?
It's crazy. I don't know why they don't have one. He's not out on the road signing a bunch of quarterbacks already. What's gone wrong with Barry Odom?
In all seriousness, though, I mean, you know, Heupel, it's a great gig going to UCF, but what's the next move? Do you look at what Josh left behind and try to get somebody that's going to, you know, not just take what he has, but take it and move it to the next level? Where do you think this goes?
It's a really good question. I don't know if anybody has a good read on this yet. I don't think anyone is surprised that Josh Heupel is gone. I think he's always had the ambition to be a head coach. I think they're a little surprised at the job he got. But what's the next move? I'm not sure. Do you want to keep it in the family of the offense, not necessarily the staff, but this kind of offense, and get somebody that's, you know, well-trained in the sort of air raid slash Baylor system? There's plenty of names out there, plenty of coaches out there who have jobs I think would jump at the chance to be an SEC offensive coordinator. Or do you go with somebody who's has more SEC value? Do you value more SEC experience than you do this type of offense experience? And I still think you can look at this staff. I mean, Andy Hill has been at Missouri for a long time. He's been in several different types of offenses. He's a smart guy. He knows how to call plays, I'm pretty sure, to this point in his career. If you look at Joe John Finley, who's a lot younger, but he has been immersed in this offense for several years now. So I think Barry's got plenty of options. The one thing he has to do is he's got to hire a quarterbacks coach. I don't think there's anybody on the staff that you can turn that group of quarterbacks over to, whether they include Drew Locke or not. You need somebody that can work with that position group, because it's obviously really important.
Will we learn a lot about Barry Odom besides what we see in press conferences and post games, where he's a little bit of milquetoast, about the kind of recruiter salesman that he is for his program based on the hire?
To some degree, yeah. I mean, because he's got more credibility now after going 7-5 and winning 6 games in a row. You know, it's a lot easier to make this hire now than it would have been a year ago, coming off 4-8. So I think this is a statement for him. I think you include Jim Sterk in there because you've got to go to the boss to not so much to get the approval, because I don't think Jim's the type that's going to micromanage hires, but you got to know how much money you're dealing with to be able to spend right now. I think I saw in USA Today's latest report there were 15, or was it 17, assistant coaches in the country right now that are making $1 million or more, which is a crazy number compared to what it was just a few years ago. I don't know if you break the bank that much, but Josh Heupel was making $700,000, so you would think you'd start in that ballpark. That's a lot of money, and I think you can get a pretty good coach at that price.
If they do leave the confines of the Matsey and Faroe Memorial, is there a realistic home run hire? Is there a guy that we've seen a name for already, or has been floating around that everybody would kind of rally behind and be like, wow, geez, yeah, that's the one.
You know, with coordinators, and I'm not like taking a cop out here, but I think you can hit a home run without it on the day the press release comes out thinking it's a home run, because there's a lot of really good play callers, X's and O guys out there who aren't necessarily big names. You can find somebody at the FCS level that, for whatever reason, hasn't just gotten that big promotion or that big job yet, but they'd still be really good in a situation like this. I do think there are some names out there, some guys that are that have been in this kind of offense that fit the mold. I mean, I really think Graham Harrell, he's young, but he's learned under Mike Leach. He's done it at a coordinator level at North Texas the last couple years. And done it at a pretty high level to where I think he'd be a natural fit, and I think he'd be good with the quarterbacks. You know, there's just a lot of names out there that I think would be good in this role. You know, but it all depends what if Barry can pull the trigger and get it done.
Dave Matter, St. Louis Post-Dispatch here. Last question as we get ready to exit stage left and let you get back to work. Drew Locke, will the last time we see him in a Missouri Tiger uniform walking off the field at the Texas Bowl, or walking off the field after senior day with a rock on his shoulder?
Great question. You know, I mean, he'll play in the Texas Bowl. Will he get that senior game day next year at Missouri? You know, I think it all depends on what he gets back from the NFL. And his family is going to, as I've been told, they're going to do their due diligence on this one. They want that information, and they're going to patiently wait for it, and then they're going to make a really reasonable, smart decision. They're not going to, you know, jump into this and make any kind of foolish decision. They're not going to scoff at the information they get back from the NFL and say, oh, gosh, he's so much better than that. He's going anyway. I think they're going to make a really sound, reasonable decision. If he gets a first-round grade, gosh, that's hard to turn down. And, you know, I know if Gary Pinkel were his head coach, like he did with all of his first-round picks, he told him, hey, you got to go. I think Barry Odom, I would think, would give him very similar advice like he did with Charles Harris a year ago. So it all depends on, on that letter. I can't predict that. I know the family can't predict it either. My gut feeling is he'd like to come back, but if you get that first-round grade, that's hard to say no to.
Yeah, because there are dollars attached to that first-round grade.
Just a few.
Just a few,
I've heard.
Yeah, not so that anybody noticed, but the Alumni Association would be on the horn with him, I'm sure. Yeah, all right.
Sure.
Dave Matter, St. Louis Post-Dispatch. The holidays are coming up. The book, Gary Pinkel, along with Dave Matter, 100-Yard Journey. It is an excellent read into the life of Gary Pinkel, and there's a lot of similarities, his early career and his later career. So it's a great read. Pick it up for your folks. Dave, thank you for the time, sir. I appreciate it. Have a great rest of the week.
Great. Thanks, guys.
You are very welcome. Dave Matter, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, with us here on The Closers. Again, you follow him on Twitter, at Dave_Matter. Hour number two, we're going to hear from Kayla Michael. She used to be Kayla McDowell, had a one-on-one with her. Not a lot of basketball, more about who the player is. It's a little bit like what we used to do with Mizzou Media Mondays. We had opportunities to sit down with the players. And also in hour number two, Brian Smith, head wrestling coach for the Missouri Tigers, as they get ready for another duel of this weekend. And we will have, that's a Met Side Seats. So you want to stick around and listen in hour number two to find out the details on how you can score a pair of Matt's Side Seats for this weekend's home duel at the Hearn Center. And also UM curators meeting today to review the design plans for the South End Zone at the University of Missouri as they get ready for that next expansion for, right now, Barry Odom. And then whoever his offensive coordinator is. Seems like they should really get moving on that one.
Jeez.
I know. Hour number two, right around the corner.
The Closers on News Talk 1240 KLIK and News Talk 1400 KFRU.